Hello, welcome to the Group 1 AI in the Law podcast series. I'm Gavin Rome, Senior Counsel at Group 1 Advocates and one of the hosts of this Group 1 podcast series. This is the third of our podcast series, perhaps it's the most important of our episodes. Today we'll be exploring, as part of the topic of AI and its impact on the South African legal system, the question of AI and the facilitation of better and more democratic access to the justice system. So we are tackling a profound question. Can technology, especially AI, truly democratize access to justice in South Africa? An English judge famously remarked in the 19th century, "Justice in our country is open to all, just like the Ritz Hotel." But is it like a swish five-star hotel, really so? Or is justice still reserved for those with the means to afford it? In a country marked by stupefyingly stark inequalities, AI offers a chance to disrupt the status quo, making legal services accessible, affordable, and even more equitable for the general populace. Joining me are two remarkable guests. Amber Williams from the Empire Partner Foundation, an NGO levering technology to solve social challenges, and Rafi Siegel, the founder and entrepreneur of My AI Lawyer, a platform redefining affordable legal services. Together, we'll explore how innovation is transforming lives and what the future holds for justice in the digital age. So, whether you're a legal professional, tech enthusiast, or someone curious about the future of justice, stay tuned. This is where law meets innovation, and the conversation starts now. Hello, everyone. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Gavin. Very exciting to be here.
Thank you, Gavin. Great to be here. Looking forward to it.
Amber, if I could ask you a question to kick it off. EPF's model, as we understand it, and it's accessible on the website for anybody to have a look at, we're in your studio today, just down the road from the Advocates Chambers in Sandton. But you focus, as I understand it, on empowering communities within the context of social developments. Could you tell us how you've used not so much AI, but legal tech recently in your organization to assist delivering better access to justice, particularly in the civil area?
Thank you so much, Gavin. So yes, Empire Partner Foundation was founded in 2016 with the goal of how can we upskill or empower the youth to develop the technology that can solve our social challenges. And one of those challenges is access to justice. And we were fortunate enough through our partner network to be introduced to probono.org, who exclusively offer pro bono services for civil matters. And through this introduction and over 2 years of many, many meetings and a lot of software development, we were able to create our digital case management platform for them. And what this essentially does is it gives...
Can I just stop you there? Yes. How are you able, in an office in Illovo next to Sandton, create a digital case management platform? What are the facilities you have which enabled you to do that?
So through our nine-year journey, we have been able to develop three distinct units to our organization, the first being the foundation itself, which is a self-sustaining foundation. So we're not donor grant reliant, but we produce technological platforms that we then take to market that sustains us. And how we do this is through our artificial intelligence campus. So we have about 120 young people across three different campuses in South Africa, one here in Johannesburg.
So I'm sitting on your campus today.
Yes.
Can see the desks and the energy around us and the whole ecosystem exuding some level of positivity.
Thank you. So all of these brilliant young people that you see behind us, they go through our very customized one-year work integrated learning program where we train them in future skills, so AI, e-commerce, blockchain, crypto, and data science. And then they're put onto live projects and start building these really impactful platforms. And so
I diverted you, though. One of these platforms is your digital case management.
Correct.
Could you just tell us some of the numbers which have been involved and why you say this has been assisting
Of course.
Effectively the end user, the citizen, to gain access to legal services in the civil arena.
So when ProBono.org came to us, they had a problem with not only being able to onboard lawyers to do this pro bono work, but also how to track their hours and how to assign them cases. So it was mostly an administrative nightmare, especially if you're trying to coordinate across the country and people are very specific about what they can do, when they can do it, how they can do it. When you're working with volunteer time, flexibility is obviously very important. And managing all of this manually severely hampered their ability to reach as many people as they could or to close cases as efficiently as they would like to. And so we created a platform where they were able to not only digitally onboard the lawyers wanting to do pro bono work, digitally manage those cases, but also to digitally onboard clients. And this is through a web-based and a mobile platform.
It developed entirely through your online AI campus.
Correct.
So that's not so much online, but through your AI-enabled campus.
Correct. And so from there, we went live in January of this year, and they had a backlog of about 5,000 cases, which have now been reduced to just over 300. Within 6 months using this digital platform. So not only is it about efficiency, but when we look at access, in the rural areas, at most you're going to get a community advisory officer and a paralegal, somebody who can only start the processes of helping somebody who doesn't have the financial means to gain access to justice. And now through this digital platform, we're able to, through those methods, reach out to them, onboard them onto the system and give them the legal representation or the access to legal services that they deserve without further impeding their legal journey. A lot of times people spend so much money just going for a consultancy, finding out somebody who's willing to look at their case that it's stopped, the whole process is over before it's even gotten started.
Rafi, if we can turn from legal technology to AI. AI is a step in legal tech impacting what lawyers do. And I understand that your focus has been particularly on using AI, whatever that might mean, in delivering to citizens the ability to access legal services. And you've had some success in this. Although you're a new kid on the block, I understand that you received a award related to democratizing access to justice or something like that from Microsoft as one of the most innovative partners last year, and you've received some sort of recognition and ceremony for that. So if you could tell us a little bit about your journey from how to transition from general legal tech into AI and how you gain insights into that regard, particularly with access to justice.
Thanks, Kev. So I think let me go back a bit. The business I run is just to set it right, is Legal Interact. Legal Interact has two product sets.
So your business is Legal Interact.
Legal Interact. And we're a legal tech company, always been providing solutions to law firms. So practice management, time and billing, case management at law firm.
So digital case management is something which you're very familiar
with, yeah. But on a time and billing basis. So
Money.
So 5-6 years ago, we recognized the opportunity to see how we could help our clients connect with their clients. And when you look at corporate South Africa, what do they really need? They need to be able to draft contracts, review contracts, and manage obligations in contracts. To do that at scale, you need to think about AI enablement, and AI enablement is, focused on driving automation, driving efficiency, content generation, content management. That led us to really build out our AI services. And on that journey, one of the real experiences you have as a South African firm is on Mandela Day, you get to work with an NPO, an NGO. We work with Matlabana. Matlabana came to us to talk about a
Matlabana. What is in what space are they operating?
They are women and children gender-based violence. and worst. And so, you know, when they came in and came to visit us, they would always tell us about the kinds of problems they wanted to solve. And for me, it became pretty evident that if you looked at the legislation, you looked at regulation, if you wanted to curate that information so that anyone who was going through any kind of sense of violence could ask that question, then we'd be able to curate an appropriate answer. And so that was actually the spark. That was the moment. And so we're very lucky in that as a legal tech provider, we have all these AI skills, but we also have a partner in legal and tax. And through legal and tax and legal interact, we came up with My AI Lawyer. And the idea, you know, what embodies the delivery of this AI information is a spirit to the South African citizens that we're a companion for you. And so you could ask any kind of question, whether it's labor-related, matrimonial, civil, and the idea is that we would then be able to provide you with an answer.
You've told me in one of our chats about initiating the product and something about WhatsApp and receiving queries in the tens of thousands. Could you just recap that story? Because it's particularly interesting in this context.
So when we talk about, I think this is the real point about AI is that you have this massive opportunity to personalize at scale. And so right now we're at about 100,000 questions through My AI Lawyer.
In how long a period?
In about 18 months. So I think that in terms of you know, just the number of questions that come through to, and that's what really gives me hope, is that citizens of South Africa are asking questions, they have problems to solve, and these are real moments of truth. And I'm being fired. I'm going into a disciplinary. What is the process? I'm getting married. Do I need an ANC or do I need to have some form of I need a will? And so all of these moments of truth that we go through in life are now embodied into AI. And so when we talk about AI, let's just try and demystify the point about AI with legislation or regulation, and that is curating that information into an AI digestible kind of piece of information, very focused on South African law. So it's those biases, potential kind of contamination from outside legal information is not flowing into information we curate. And we can talk about how we do that if you do want to get into it.
Well, can I just ask, so if somebody who's interested out there,
yeah,
who says, well, I'm about to get married, I've heard about a thing called an ANC. How do I make sure that I can navigate the complexity of a marriage contract? How would they go about then getting assistance? How would they find out about AI? How would they then, would they need to pay anything?
I think we've got a freemium model. Go to myairlawyer.coza. You'd be able to then connect to the WhatsApp of My AI Lawyer. Alternatively, go to legalandtax.co.za. And you'll see My AI Lawyer entry point, and you can ask any question there. What's really, really superb about the curation process is not only will you be able to ask the question about I'm getting married, and then what are the contracts or documents I need, but it'll actually, you can keep asking questions. So there isn't that, definitely not a male, because we call her Robin. A male would ask one question, and then I think you'd check out. But ask multiple questions and it will actually know more about what your problem is and give you more guidance. One important point.
So you're getting that sort of legal experience and expertise in your advisor, which people generally associate only with a very seasoned lawyer who's got decades of experience, but who would not necessarily be available to a walk-in client.
Exactly. And I think the key point here is that it's not autopilot, it is copilot. So it's when you think about this democratization at scale, it is the ability to both answer the question that's being asked, give further insights to potential questions to ask with a conduit into a human lawyer. And, you know, between us and Legal and Tax, we are able to provide both this digital when you want it, human when you need it, kind of perspective.
That brings us to this question. I don't know whether you, Amber, would have this criticism. You've obviously at EPF worked with venture capitalists and startups. That's your space. You've got that youthful energy. But one of the criticisms of startups such as yours, Rafi, is that Well, they're just trying to get to a large subscription base and make money, and they don't really care about the end user. I don't know, Amber, whether you in the NGO space have that criticism of venture capitalism, but it's certainly out there. So I'd just like to start with whether Amber has a perspective on those sort of criticisms, and then give you an opportunity to address that level of criticism, which is not necessarily directed at you, Rafi, but at the AI startup space and these subscription models.
So I think a very valuable lesson that we've learned here. So under Empire Partner Foundation, we obviously also have the EPF Tech Fund, which is our venture capitalist and venture building portion. And we live in a capitalist society. And I think that something that is always very important to bear in mind is that any venture, but especially a tech venture, has to be sustainable. And in order to do that, there needs to be a commercial aspect. But I think when looking at tech and specifically AI that's used for social good, that commercial aspect is simply to keep your initiative, or to keep that the essence of what you're doing going, and you have to find a way of making money in order to do that.
So responsible capitalism is a way to make it sustainable.
Anything in excess is a bad thing. And I think it's the same principles here. So I think that in of itself, the fact that the tech is being used for the greater social good already cancels out that the subscription is a necessity rather than, I think, a revenue stream.
So let's give Rafi a chance to give us to address this concern. What measures are you taking to ensure that AI Lawyer truly benefits its users, and it's not just something which goes to those who've put up the funding and have developed it?
So I think there's multiple parts to the answer. I think the first is that it has to be reasonably priced, and that people can subscribe to it, and that the answers that we're providing are curated, reasonable, and fair. And so, you know, just when we curate that content, we create a graph of all the knowledge that we have. Every question that comes through gets validated or verified in terms of seeing, are we happy with the answer? So that's a portion of work that gets done. We're continuously scouring the web to curate new content, new legislation, new precedents that gets added in. But I think the fundamental point that we have to think about is AI is like, what does responsible, ethical, transparent, and fair AI look like? And, you know, how do we ensure that we're not actually treading on the consumer's rights?
So there's a point which you raised, and I don't want to interrupt us in your general answer because it's important, but there's a point which one of the wise old heads of AI developments in South Africa, Arthur Goldstack, has made, that if we don't use these tools, we get left with something worse. If we don't use these tools openly and with enthusiasm and try and develop them ourselves, we're going to be left with the worst of all worlds. But you explained that far better than I could.
Yeah, so in a recent set of results that Arthur released, he shared that, you know, in organizations that don't allow AI to be used, then you have this shadow AI. So 63% of people using AI, not paid for, not private, not secure, and it could be in any one of these foundation models, and they are being used. And then you share them, and you have Google then actually sweeping up those results, and suddenly your shared curated answers are sitting on the web, and it's there for all. You can still go in and sign up for these foundation models, $20, 400 rand. Their pricing is not really supportive of our economy. So you have to be very thoughtful about what you're going to do. But that's why it's critical that these tools are sitting on platforms like Microsoft or like AWS, because in that area, not only are you talking about responsible, ethical AI, we can speak a lot about that. Not only talking about privatized data, but you're talking about compliant, POPI compliant, GDPR compliant, your data's residenced in South Africa. That's super important. So all of that's absolutely critical as we look down the road, because this concept of fair and ethical AI is going to be materially important. Not only do we have good actors, and we work on AI for good, but wherever there's a good actor, there's a couple of bad actors. And so I think that for us, that's going to be a challenge in the future.
Can I ask you, just these are big concepts, but each of you, if you could consider for a moment, where legal tech in your case, and legal tech or AI, Rafi, you have seen, Amber, you have seen it making a discrete level of assistive output to somebody who wouldn't have had access to either the legal system or legal services in the absence of legal tech or AI.
Sure. So I think to go back to our partnership with probono.org, and I think I'd like to just give two examples here, maybe one for
perhaps legal just tech. Before you go forward, just a few words about probono.org, because this is the NGO space. Yes. Stepping in to provide citizens with a need which is unmet, particularly in regard to civil legal services.
Thank you. So probono.org, they were founded in 2010. They're situated at Constitutional Hill, their main offices, but they do have offices all over the country, and they offer free civil legal services to indigenous peoples, not necessarily only South Africans. This includes refugee and child law. And to that point, how legal tech has specifically helped them is that in many situations where refugees, people without paperwork, asylum seekers, especially children, undocumented children, getting them into the legal system or getting them represented or being able to get them into court or just getting them in act to have a consult with a lawyer is almost impossible. And we've seen that since the implementation of the digital case management system, and especially through...
Yes, so I'd asked you to something specific, and then I took you to something broad, and you were working on juggling two answers at the same time.
That's fine. But so through the system, we've seen a noted increase in being able to help refugees and asylum seekers in particular because of being able to remotely assess their means, their access, that verify that in fact they are refugees and asylum seekers has gone up about 20% since we've gone onto the digital space. And we know in South Africa that's a huge problem coming from the SADC region, but the rest of Africa and South Africa is a haven, but most people become not even second-class citizens, third-class citizens, never being able to get a permit, never being able to get any kind of documentation and lead any kind of lifestyle that could be sustainable or dignified. And I think that was really a very eye-opening, I mean, obviously, of course, these tools are to help our citizenry, but when we look at the South African model and we look at the way that we interact with our neighbors, it's our duty to then provide access to that legal or to justice where they can have their day in court or have their case seen to, and most never get that opportunity.
And so, Rafi, from your perspective, that's a business perspective, but have you had that moment when you see this product allows people to do this access to an AI legal assistant, allows Mr. X, Ms. Y to have done something which in their lives which they wouldn't have been able to do before?
So I've had a few experiences like that, and I'll tell you just one, which was a real experience. A friend of mine's a locksmith, got a call one Saturday night. A lady wanted him to come out and change keys, and he said he'll do it on Sunday. I said, let's go now. I really am interested to understand why someone on a Saturday night wants to change their keys. So off we went to the person, to a flat in Sandton. We went in, and he changed it. It took him a couple of minutes, 10, 15 minutes. And then I asked her, why would you want to change your keys on a Saturday evening? She said, her landlord keeps walking in on her in a flat. I said, well, you know, we talk about access to justice. Access to justice is about actually knowing what you're entitled to have, to experience, to how do you stop your landlord? And I showed her my lawyer. She asked that question, and it told her exactly what she could do. That was quite profound, because it was like an immediate moment of someone who sits in legal tech, and it doesn't necessarily get that exposure to all those points. So that's the one thing. I think the second thing is, when you actually understand what people are asking and the struggle they go through, is we think about AI as if it was cold and calculated. But actually, the more transparent we are with AI about just how dire the situation is, the more emotionally connected AI becomes, the more sincere it becomes, the more empathetic it becomes. And so I've had like multiple experiences where people say, you know, that your AI engine is much more empathetic and helpful than the human that I have to speak to.
Than the grumpy lawyer or the grumpy bureaucrat.
I didn't say that. But certainly, yeah. You know, my AI lawyer is forgiven for getting it a little bit wrong, because we'll fix it. But they definitely are very, very socially focused and compassionate and wanting to be your companion. And so when they show up like that all the time.
So could I, we've touched on it, the need to have responsible, ethical AI, and one of the questions that obviously leads into both in legal tech, Amber, but also particularly, Raf, in the development of AI, is what is the role of regulation, state regulation, what is the role of the legal environment? Because I understand the concern that it can squish development and entrepreneurship, and can be the dead hand of state regulation. On the other hand, this is a dangerous space, perilous space, AI. We've all heard the doomsday scenarios, and as you have said earlier, Rafi, they're bad actors, and we've all had experience with bad actors in this space. So what role does regulation and ethical regulation, particularly within South Africa, which is a small part of the global environment, have to play in this?
So I think I'll defer to Rafi to start.
Okay. So I think definitely when we think about AI, it has to be reportable, has to be transparent, has to be ethical. So I think regulation needs to make sure that it's an explainable structure in how we're getting the ones out. I think that's the one side of it. I think in terms of being compliant, POPI compliant, encryption compliant, data sovereignty, that needs to be made sure that, you know, there's regulation already.
Can you explain to listeners what is meant by data sovereignty?
So where is your data stored? So there's a requirement with POPI that your data is stored in, let's say, within South Africa. So if you move data outside of South Africa and it has personal identifiable information, what kind of data can flow outside of the borders of South Africa? And then, you know, if it's flowing into these foundation models, is it just flowing into...
When you say foundation models, are we talking about not a foundational model of the foundation?
No.
We're talking about something definitely different in the... you can explain
exactly
that.
So the foundation models would be OpenAI, Anthropic's Claude. It would be...
The giants.
It would be Microsoft's Azure AI. Yeah. So if you just go to ChatGPT and you're putting data in, then your data's definitely flowed outside of the borders of South Africa. And so if you want to create an API, well then, you know, how does your API handle data flow? What's encrypted? What's privatized? How does that work? And I think that you need to consider regulation in those kind of three areas. Just how AI is curated, delivered, and managed, how data is transferred from the requester to the service providers, and then, you know, what does your infrastructure look like? How do you manage that infrastructure?
And your experience in the South African regulatory environment, does that leave you feeling hopeful, or is it something which we, as in many other areas, appear to be missing the boat on?
No, I'd say I'm cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, cautiously optimistic. We'll come back to the optimism component.
Okay.
Amber, from your perspective, NGO perspective.
I think our perspective is maybe a lot, a little bit more holistic, in that I think, number one, what is severely lacking, which definitely impacts regulation and governance, is education. So a lot of people are very afraid of AI, they don't understand AI, and they don't know how to interact with AI. That leads to a lot of myths, misconceptions, and inadvertently this would also lead to ill training or misinformation going out into large-scale AI, which then would affect the what comes back. And so educating the users and then obviously also educating the developers of AI as to curation and what are the steps of verifying your information. Because I think we saw a month or two ago with one of the social media AI bots where it was spewing misinformation to the public on a public forum. And there weren't any steps that could be taken either as a user or the person who is developing this AI that could regulate or had any consequences to this, even though that misinformation has widespread consequences.
I think there's consensus from both entrepreneurs and NGO perspectives is that we can't have a free-for-all laissez-faire space. If we're going to have AI which is people-centered, it has to have a regulatory environment in which it operates.
Definitely. And I think that leads to my second point in that we need to be more proactive. So at the moment, regulation and governance around AI is extraordinarily reactive. And the problem with that is that the damage is already done and you're trying, not even effectively, trying to prevent it from happening again. Whereas I think that as people in the tech space, in the civil society space, and even and in the legal space, is our duty to proactively look and create those policies and safeguards as we see this growing rather than waiting for the problem to occur and then trying to change the law in a reaction to it.
Okay, so I'm going to get into a question which we'll be asking all of our guests. But before I do that, just to tell you where I'm going, I want to get a sense of what your fears and concerns are. So ultimately, we will be asking every participant in this series that on a scale of 0 to 10, AI and legal tech and the impact on our legal environment, are you, this is the harbinger of the apocalypse and of doom and gloom, or are we going to be launched into a utopian idealistic future and 0 being doom and gloom, 10 being a utopia? But before I ask you to place yourself on that scale, what are your fears in a couple of sentences about AI in the legal system in South Africa?
I think something that I've noticed is that unfortunately in South Africa, we don't have a very big tradition of follow through. So once we get a little bit of information, we think that we know what we're talking about and we kind of run with it. And within that space, I mean, there is mob justice that happens right now.
These shadow systems.
Exactly. And what would be my fear, particularly in the legal space, is that if there are copycats or unregulated or unverified platforms like My AI Lawyer that aren't put through those rigorous processes and then disseminating misinformation, that could definitely lead to a rise of people taking justice, as they may see it, into their own hands.
Rafi, your concerns about AI, if you have them, which I'm sure you do, but particularly focusing on the legal space.
I think that the biggest fear I have is ethical and fair, responsible AI into the future, tailored without bias for our citizens. I think we can talk about law firms separately. I think that probably is the biggest fear, but I'm optimistic about AI itself. But it's just, what do we as humans do with it? And remember, that's just a tool. And so whatever bad we do normally, we now have a really incredible tool to do even worse.
All right. That leads into the last question. 0 being AI is going to be a bad thing and is proving to be a bad thing. 10 AI in the legal system is going to be a wonderful thing already has proven to be, and it's only going to get better. Where would you place yourself on that scale, Rafi?
I'm about an 8. I'm roaring towards a 10. I'm roaring.
Those concerns that you've expressed, I suppose you've tempered your 10 back down to an 8.
Back down to an 8. I think you can't put this genie back in the bottle.
I would agree, but I think my answer depends. So I think with proactive regulation and ethical implementation, I'm also at an 8. I think without that, I'm at a 4.
All right.
So everything hinges on how well we can just regulate and monitor it.
So somewhere on good days, an 8, and on bad days, a 4. Thank you very much, both of you. Those are really insightful points of view. I'm hoping that there will be synergies which can be explored between citizens or just general South Africans in the broader sense to access legal systems. And we look forward to hearing more from both of you in this endeavor. Thank you very much, Amber. Thank you very much, Rafi.
Thank you.
Thank you.